Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope on UK visit. Pope Benedict says how much he is looking forward to his visit to Britain next week and how it will be a particular joy for him to beatify the 19th century Englishman Cardinal Newman. Elderly emphasis. We speak to the manager and one of the occupants of a London care home for old people that will be visited by Pope Benedict during his trip to Britain. And Raphael's masterpieces reunited. Four Raphael tapestries from the Vatican Museums go on display at London's V&A Museum in an exhibition timed to coincide with the papal visit to England and Scotland. And we talk to one of the curators about this event. Pope Benedict says he is very much looking forward to his visit to Britain in a week's time, and also spoke of how it will be a particular joy for him to beatify the 19th century English Cardinal John Henry Newman. His remarks came in a special video message for the people of Great Britain that was broadcast during his Wednesday general audience. Lydia Kane reports.
With Pope Benedict's visit to the United Kingdom now just over a week away, the Holy Father took the opportunity to devote a large part of his weekly general audience to this apostolic voyage. From the Paul VI Hall inside the Vatican, the Pope relayed his thoughts about the trip with a video message to the people of Great Britain.
I'm very much looking forward to my visit to the United Kingdom in a week's time, and I send heartfelt greetings to all the people of Great Britain.
The Pope expressed his deep appreciation for all the work that has gone into the preparations for the visit so far, and he especially thanked the many people who have been praying for the success of this journey.
I am aware that a vast amount of work has gone into the preparations for the visit, not only by the Catholic community, but by the government, the local authorities in Scotland, London and Birmingham, the communications media and the security services. And I want to say how much I appreciate the efforts that have been made to ensure that the various events planned will be truly joyful celebrations. Above all, I thank the countless people who have been praying for the success of the visit and for a great outpouring of God's grace upon the Church and the people of your nation.
In the message, the Pope also spoke about one event in particular, the beatification of the Venerable John Henry Newman in Birmingham.
It will be a particular joy for me to beatify the Venerable John Henry Newman in Birmingham on Sunday, 19 September. This truly great Englishman lived an exemplary priestly life, and through extensive writings made a lasting contribution to church and society, both in his native land and in many other parts of the world.
During this state visit, Pope Benedict will meet with people from all walks of life, from Queen Elizabeth II to civil leaders. And speaking on Wednesday, the Holy Father said he was very much looking forward to these encounters.
I look forward to meeting representatives of the many different religious and cultural traditions that make up the British population, as well as civil and political leaders. I am most grateful to Her Majesty the Queen and to His Grace the Archbishop of Canterbury for receiving me, and I look forward to meeting them.
As always at the weekly general audience, the Pope reflects on great figures of the Church, and this week was no different, with the Holy Father returning to the great nun and mystic of the 12th century, St. Hildegard of Bingen.
Hildegard celebrated visions, vividly interpreted the Word of God for her contemporaries, calling them to a committed Christian life. She brought her women's insight to the mysteries of faith. In her many works, she contemplated the mystic marriage between God and humanity, accomplished in the Incarnation, as well as the spousal union of Christ and the Church.
Of the thousands of people gathered in the Paul VI Hall, the Holy Father had special greetings in English for the many pilgrims who had come all the way from England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, Sweden, Nigeria, Indonesia, Canada and the US. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
On Tuesday evening, Pope Benedict attended a special concert given in his honour by the Pontifical Academy of Science. Lydia O'Kane again.
Tuesday evening's concert was described by Pope Benedict as an intense performance of the Requiem by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. The musical evening was given in the Pope's honour by the Pontifical Academy of Science against the serene backdrop of the courtyard of the Apostolic Palace at Castel Gandolfo. In his address to all those who had listened to the orchestra of Padua and Veneto and the choir from the Academy of Voice in Turin, the Holy Father displayed his affection for this famed composer and his knowledge of music history too. Pope Benedict said that the music of this supreme musician always has the ability to transport him to his childhood, adding that in Mozart's Mass, he felt that as a child a ray of beauty from heaven had joined him, a feeling the Pope said he still has today.
Ogni volta che ascolto la sua musica, non posso non riandare con la memoria alla mia chiesa parrocchiale, quando da ragazzo nei giorni di festa risuonava una sua messa.
Pope Benedict went on to say that in Mozart everything is in perfect harmony, every note, every musical phrase. Drawing this musical tour de force to a close, the Holy Father said that Mozart's Requiem is a high expression of faith that knows the tragedy of human existence and one that is silent on its dramatic aspects, and therefore is an expression of Christian faith itself, conscious that all human life is illuminated by the love of God. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
It's not getting top billing and is unlikely to hug the media limelight when we look at the list of the people and places that Pope Benedict will visit during his historic state visit to England and Scotland that begins on September the 16th. But the Pope's planned visit to St. Peter's Residence, a care home for elderly people in southwest London, is nonetheless a very special and keenly awaited event for the home and its occupants. Run by the Little Sisters of the Poor, the manager and superior of St. Peter's Residence is Sister Marie-Claire Brennan, and she told me about her reaction to the home being chosen as a venue for the Pope to visit.
To be honest, I was astounded when we were approached, and to be quite honest, the first thing that came to my mind was a little story in the Gospel of St. Luke about Zacchaeus being too small to see the Lord passing by, and so the Lord called him down from the tree and said, "Zacchaeus, I'm coming to stay at your house today." Well, he was so full of joy and enthusiasm, and that's literally, I think, how we all felt here when we heard that the Holy Father was actually coming to our house to visit us.
So there's a great deal of excitement, is there?
Absolutely. Frenzied activity at the moment, but all very, very worthwhile. The residents are very excited. The sisters are absolutely overjoyed. And, you know, we're hoping to share this moment with lots of other people too, families of residents, volunteers, lay associates. So it's actually a wonderful, wonderful occasion.
And why do you believe that the Pope wanted to include a visit to a home for the elderly in his very packed agenda for this visit to Britain?
I think it's really important that the Church has actually shown its great love and concern for older people. I think the Holy Father will be visiting all sorts of people and meeting with all sorts of people. The elderly don't always get a look in on sort of big events like this. And I think it's really significant that the Holy Father is showing his great love, his great concern and respect for the older people of our society by actually coming to visit us here at St. Peter's.
Tell us a bit about your feelings and expectations in general concerning the papal visit to Britain.
So certainly, the visit of our Holy Father to Great Britain, I think, is a great grace for the Catholic Church, first and foremost, in this country. And I suppose it's a great opportunity for us to give witness to our faith. The Holy Father obviously is coming to confirm us in our faith. But I think also it's a great opportunity, because it's a state visit, to strengthen the relations between the Church and the state, and to make people aware of who we are and what we stand for. And I think a lot of people who are maybe not very religious-minded will be asking a lot of questions, and I think it will do a huge amount of good for the country.
What does it mean to be elderly in today's high technology, high pressurised and very secularised society?
Well, I would certainly say that the elderly in today's world and in today's society should not be left behind. And I think there is a tendency to leave them behind. Sometimes they get left out of people's agendas. We live life today, I think, a bit in the fast lane, and people don't have time to care and to give elderly consideration, who often, through physical frailty and other illnesses, have slowed down, which is quite normal. But they then tend to become what we might call the forgotten generation. So I think it's very difficult a lot of the time for elderly people, but they also have a huge amount to bring. They've got so much life experience. They've got a wealth of knowledge. They're full of wisdom and insight into all sorts of things.
One of those residents at St. Peter's eagerly looking forward to the papal visit is Monica Lawlor, who's 84 and a Catholic. She says she is still finding it hard to believe that Pope Benedict will actually be visiting them in person next week.
Well, it's very exciting. And partly I can't quite believe it's true. And that's difficult. And then it's so exciting because it's like sort of turning around and suddenly finding you've got the Pope in your front parlour. It's most amazing. We're going to have a wonderful time.
And is everybody else similarly excited there?
Well, some are very excited and some I don't think quite believe it yet. They'll believe it when it happens. I think they're just stunned because it's not exactly what you expect.
Now, what in your view are some of the main problems faced by the elderly in today's very high technology, high pressurised society?
Well, if you're not on the internet, you might as well be dead. Everybody says, yes, well, we can do that over the net. And you say, what about if I don't have a net? And then they say, well, you've got no right to be alive in that case.
So you feel a bit sidelined?
A bit, frankly, yes. And the other thing is that it's when you slow down and it speeds up, it's not so good because it gets faster and I get slower.
How important is your faith for you in, shall we say, these twilight years of your life?
Vital. I was very frightened that I would end up in an old people's home and never get to Mass at all, except perhaps once a year if somebody took me. And I was terribly pleased when the sisters took me because I knew that I could have Mass every day and for the rest of my life. And that was just wonderful.
If you had a message that you could relay to Pope Benedict during his visit to the home, what would that be?
Oh, goodness me. I think what I would say to him is, in spite of the things that don't look too good, just keep hoping and praying, because things don't look too good sometimes. But in the end, you have to hang in there, and I'm sure you will, so he doesn't need me to tell him.
And do you think that the fact that he himself is an elderly person, he is after all 83, means that he can in many ways empathise with some of the problems that you face as an elderly person?
Well, he's in better shape than I am, and so I think to myself, I'm only a year older than him, so I feel he must feel some of what I feel, only I think he's better at doing it than I am. He's in very good shape for a chap of his age.
Yes, he is indeed. And what message would you like to hear from the Pope?
I think I just want him to tell us once again that God loves us, because that's why we're here. If the sisters didn't love God and God didn't love the sisters, we wouldn't be here. We'd just be left on the sidelines, rotting in some corner.
That was Monica Lawlor, a resident in St. Peter's Care Home for the Elderly. And earlier you heard the voice of Sister Marie-Claire Brennan, the manager of the home. For Renaissance art lovers, it's a unique and must-see exhibition. Four tapestries designed by Raphael from the Vatican Museums have gone on display alongside their original designs or cartoons at an exhibition at London's Victoria and Albert Museum. The exhibition featuring these masterpieces from the Renaissance artist will run until mid-October, and its opening on Wednesday was timed to coincide with Pope Benedict's historic state visit to Britain next week. It's the first time ever that the tapestries and cartoons have been displayed together, something Raphael himself never witnessed. It's also the first time that the tapestries have been shown in the UK. The cartoons, on the other hand, belong to Queen Elizabeth and have been on permanent loan to the V&A Museum since 1865. Dr. Mark Evans is one of the curators of the exhibition at the V&A, and he told me why this is such an important event.
It's important because the Raphael cartoons are some of the greatest pictures ever made. I mean, they are fundamentally important also as designs for tapestries. Before the Raphael cartoons, tapestries still generally had a kind of medieval appearance. Raphael introduced high Renaissance style to tapestry design. So they're a kind of fundamental hinge, if you like, in the history of tapestry. Also, of course, they're extremely important as part of the decor of the Sistine Chapel.
How did the idea for reuniting the cartoons and the tapestries come about?
I can certainly tell you that it's something that I've long dreamed of, but I never thought would be possible to arrange. And when Professor Nesselrat at the Vatican Museums rang us at the beginning of this year suggesting, it really took a while for it to sink in, but the proposal was made to us by the Vatican Museums. And of course, we immediately accepted with alacrity, because to be able to bring these two sister works of art together after 500 years is an unique achievement. And I'm absolutely thrilled that we've been able to do it.
Right. Tell us about these four tapestries that you've got from the Vatican Museums, illustrating the lives and acts of St. Peter and St. Paul. They're four in number, aren't they? Can you very briefly describe them for us?
Yes, there are in fact 10 tapestries in the complete set. There were originally 10 cartoons, but only 7 cartoons have survived and have come down to this day. The four tapestries that we've been sent from the Vatican Museums, 3 of them depict the stories of St. Peter, and 1 of them is from the cycle depicting the story of St. Paul. And we start with the miraculous draught of fishes, where Peter and Andrew are fishing, and the miracle occurs of the miraculous draught, and Peter goes down on his knees before Christ, who blesses him. This is the first image in the Petrine cycle. The next image is variously known as Christ's charge to Peter, and also as Feed My Sheep. And that's the moment when Christ acknowledges Peter before the other apostles as the rock on which I will build my church, and the keys are transferred to the saint. And the third of the Petrine tapestries is the healing of the lame man, which shows Peter and John healing the lame man before the gates of the temple in Jerusalem. The fourth tapestry is from the Pauline series, and it depicts the miracle of St. Paul and St. Barnabas at Lystra, when Paul restores another lame man, and the crowd believe wrongly that he is a god, and this is a criticism of idolatry. So those are the four tapestries, which correspond each with an identical cartoon, but of course the cartoons are in reverse in relationship to the tapestries.
It was Pope Leo X who commissioned the tapestries to hang in the Sistine Chapel. Do we know more about his decision and his choice of Raphael for this?
Leo X was the son of Lorenzo de' Medici, the Lorenzo the Magnificent, the ruler of Florence in the 15th century. So he was brought up, you know, in one of the great art patronizing families in the world. When he became Pope, his predecessor had been Julius II della Rovere. And it was Julius II who had first hired Raphael to work in the Vatican. But the centerpiece of Julius's patronage was the Sistine Chapel. And it had been decorated by a number of great Florentine painters, including Perugino, who was Raphael's own teacher. But of course, the huge transformation of the Sistine Chapel was effected by Michelangelo when he was commissioned by Julius II to paint the famous Sistine ceiling. Julius then died, and Leo became Pope. Leo then engaged Raphael to beautify the Sistine Chapel further. At this point, the only area of the chapel that was left undecorated were the lower parts of the walls. And so, not to be outdone by his predecessor, Julius, Leo decided to decorate these with a spectacular cycle of tapestries. Now, at this time in the Renaissance, tapestries were the most spectacular and expensive form of decoration that was known. The reason was, quite simply, that they were woven out of wool, silk, gold, and silver thread. It took up to a year to make a single tapestry, and the finest were made in Brussels by the weavers such as Peter van Alst. So Leo made the extraordinarily imaginative decision to bring together Raphael, the great Italian designer, famous, of course, as a fresco painter, and the Flemish weavers. And the result was unique.
Now, you said it was very laborious and lengthy work to complete each tapestry. I read that Raphael was paid the sum of 1,000 ducats for the 10 designs for the 10 tapestries that were then completed. I mean, how much money was that in real terms?
Well, it's extremely difficult to compare 16th century prices with those today. But we understand that Raphael was paid, as you say, about 1,000 ducats, which would have been 100 ducats each for the designs, for the cartoons. But the overall cost of the cycle, including the weaving of the tapestries, was far greater than that, probably 16,000 ducats. So you see, you can compare the price that it was about 100 to design a cartoon, but about 1,500 to then weave a tapestry from it. And this total figure in the region of 16,000 ducats, as we believe, is 3.5 times what Michelangelo was paid for painting the Sistine ceiling. So it was a hugely expensive and ambitious undertaking.
What kind of reaction did the tapestries at the Sistine Chapel get when they were first put on display back in that time of Raphael?
The first record we have of them is actually while they were still being woven in Brussels, and they were viewed by the Cardinal of Aragon, and he said that they were extraordinary works of art. But when they were unveiled on St. Stephen's Day, which was the 26th of December, in 1519. They were greeted as miraculous. I mean, we know from the Papal Master of Ceremonies that they had a spectacular reception.
Originally, there were 16 tapestries commissioned, but only 10 were completed. And a lot of them, of course, got lost over the course of the history. I mean, they have had quite a checkered history. Do we know about the history of these four ones that are on display right now at the V&A?
It seems likely that the decision was originally to commission 16 tapestries. We say this because the Cardinal of Aragon mentions this when he first saw them being made, and because there are 16 spaces on the walls where they could be accommodated. But as far as we can tell, only 10 were ever made. The problem perhaps was partly that Raphael himself died in 1520 and Pope Leo the following year in 1521. And we do know that at the time of Leo's death, the papal treasury was empty. So empty, in fact, that the tapestries had to be temporarily pawned in order to pay for the conclave to elect the next pope. Shortly after that, in 1527, in the sack of Rome, a number of the tapestries were looted and taken away from Rome. It looks as though at least two, possibly more than that, went on an extraordinary round trip via Tunisia to Istanbul, where they were purchased by a middleman and came into the hands of Anne de Montmorency, the Constable of France. But he returned them to Rome in, I think, the 1550s. So after many adventures, the cycle seems to have been together again in Rome by the middle of the 16th century. And as for the cartoons, they remained in the Low Countries. They were later transferred to Italy, to Genoa, where Charles I, the King of England, bought them in 1623. So the cartoons then came to England. So they had a more peaceful history, if you like. And then they eventually were lent by the Royal Collection to the Victoria and Albert Museum in 1865.
And how much interest was shown by art lovers and the public in the run-up to this exhibition, which I gather is being offered free of charge?
Well, a huge amount, if we can judge from the press coverage and the advanced bookings of tickets for the exhibition. We've also had quite a full post bag, I think, of comments, and people have drawn new things to our attention. I mean, one correspondent wrote to me about some sculptural reliefs made after the Raphael cartoons in the early 19th century, which I was previously unaware.
Apparently, this ongoing exhibition also includes a small number of other loans from the Vatican Museums, the Apostolic Vatican Museums, and other places within the Vatican. What are they exactly?
Lenders have been extraordinarily generous, and in addition to the four tapestries, we also have two pilasters. These are decorative, long, thin, woven tapestries, also designed by Raphael, which separated one tapestry from the next. So they're like a kind of architectural adornment made of tapestry. Also, there's one of the spectacular choir books which were made for Leo X, and these were choir books which were used by the choir singing in the Sistine Chapel. And this choir book is from the Vatican Apostolic Library, and it includes a miniature of the Pope and his coat of arms. We also have, from the Vatican, one of the papal master of ceremonies diaries. And this is the diary of Paris de Grassis, who was the master of ceremonies for Pope Leo X. And this includes an account of the unveiling of the tapestries in 1519. In addition to these Vatican loans, the Royal Collection in England has lent us three of Raphael's preparatory drawings for the cartoons, and the Musée du Louvre in Paris has lent us four more. So we've been able to bring together a group of seven of these exquisite preparatory drawings, mainly done in red chalks, which show the original designs. So you can see every stage of the process, from these exquisite drawings about 30 or 40 centimetres across to the huge cartoons, 5 metres wide, and from that to the tapestries which were woven from them.
That was Dr. Mark Evans, curator at the V&A Museum in London. That's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.